Welcome to Greens vs. Blacks, a weekly House of the Dragon podcast. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Michelle.
We're two House of the Dragon fans who have decided to rewatch and recap season one whilst we wait impatiently for season two. Join us as we explore the lore and mythology of Westeros and the rise and fall of House Targaryen. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Joseph. How are you, Maester of the Citadel?
I've been upgraded since last time we spoke. I am now in a position of authority I will be abusing that power. How are you?
I think you'd better bend the knee, though, because I am still the princess.
You're much further up the food chain than I am.
Totally. I am excited!
Yes.
Because, I don't know if you've seen them, but there's been House of the Dragon news this week.
What's House of the Dragon?
Get out. There's been House of the Dragon news this week. There is a trailer coming. At the time of recording, it's not live. But
I thought we might have had it by now.
No, really disappointing. I've been checking, refreshing my feed. No, not yet. But what we do have is these amazing new character banners, which are absolutely fabulous, and I love them. And have you seen them?
Yes, they're incredible.
Yeah, they are absolutely
incredible.
I want
a physical copy of these posters. I want to know where we can get a copy of them from.
Probably eBay.
People snatching them from the foyer at HBO headquarters and then reselling them.
But basically they are really dialing into our title of Greens versus Blacks. The copy line they're using is "All must choose," and they feature our key protagonists, antagonists, and you've got your Greens and you've got your Blacks, and they are gorgeous, gorgeous things, and I love them. They do just get you in the mood. I have to say, I don't know if you think this, but the show has lent in to Team Black, I think. And I even think with these posters, it's leaning into Team Black a little bit.
I mean, absolutely. We're leaning into Team Black because this is a show all about House Targaryen. So obviously we're geared up to support them. The brilliant thing is they're the archetypal anti-hero.
Mm.
So there's just lots to love and lots to hate about Team Black. I also think Team Green, their profile's slowly being raised. I think Olivia Cooke, especially at the second part of season one, did a fantastic job of kind of cementing them as quite a scary force in Westeros.
But I think, you see, in her poster, she looks anxious.
Yes, hers is the standout poster in terms of kind of emotions. She almost looks like she's having a good cry.
Yeah, she doesn't look like, woohoo, go Team Green. She definitely looks like, what are we doing? Whereas Rhaenyra looks stately and queenly, and she's got that, like, I'm on fire and I'm ready to do battle kind of expression.
Yep, she's got the crown on. She is completely living up to that role. Yeah. I love the Eve Best and Steve Toussaint poster. I think they have perfected the 100-yard stare. I just do not want to get between them and whatever they want to achieve.
They are
world.
A power couple in Westeros. And I think I really love their energy. Even in the episode one last week, when they're talking together, when they're giving each other these little looks and glances, you get that real feeling watching them that they are a genuine couple, that they've got that history. It doesn't feel like these are actors who've just met that morning. You know, you really, really do get that sense of the dynamic between them. It's amazing. But anyway, fingers crossed that by the time we record the next episode, the new trailer will have dropped and then we can talk about that.
Yes.
So exciting.
Please drop the trailer.
Hype, hype, hype.
The new trailer.
Obviously, there's already a trailer, but you know that came out before Christmas. So old news. So as we've talked about these amazing banners, and we'll be on eBay after this looking to see how much they're selling
for. Hunting these down.
Should we talk about the recap?
Let's do it.
So first of all, we now have a title sequence, which we didn't have last week. What do we think about this title sequence?
I really like it. And it feels like the same level of production values and detail that they put into the Game of Thrones title sequence. They're obviously using the same music.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Yes.
There's no real kind of spin on that. They're not painting it, making it more dragony, jaunty. I don't know what the adjective there would be.
Jaunty.
It's the title sequence for me. It was all about, I mean, with all of that blood flowing everywhere, it was all about lineage and the family tree. They're very heavy on the symbolism.
Mm.
And I really liked the blood connecting up all the sigils and the character symbols. I thought that was very clever. And that model, Viserys' model as well.
So we think...
Getting another outing.
We definitely think it is old Valyria and it's Viserys' model.
Yeah, and the last shot where we see the sigil for House Targaryen, I read that as it's sitting on top of some kind of volcanic glow.
Yeah.
So I thought this is old Valyria built into the side of the 14 volcanoes, and this is what this is aping.
So the problem I have with the title sequence, I love the music. That no, absolutely never, never any issues with the music.
Yeah.
But
what's your problem?
I don't know whether it's my eyesight. I've just really struggled because I'm always like, I don't know. A lot of the time, I and having read into it a little bit more, I can see what they were doing. Maybe it's my TV isn't big enough. I could not. I'd be like, what is that? You know, sort of squinting. I wish they were bigger or there was something. I don't know. I like the idea of the bloodlines. I like the idea of the family tree and it, how it splits and divides and everything. But I just found it quite difficult. And one of the things, I said it last week as well, I think one of the things about the map was that it did ground you in where we were in terms of the continent of Westeros. Whereas this is informative, but also less informative at the same time. I don't know. There's more work you have to do, I think, to kind of go...
To read the symbols.
What is that?
Yeah. I think that the GOT opening sequence worked really well, especially for cartography fans, because it was updated every episode.
Yeah.
And we've obviously seen season one before, and we know if the title sequence updates or it doesn't, but we're not going to talk about that now because we're not going to spoil in episode as we recap. Mm. But that was one of the kind of interesting features of the Game of Thrones opening sequence. I do think you need a bigger TV. I do think also maybe go to a cataract clinic. I'm just, as your friend and fellow House of the Dragon obsessive, I want you to be able to see all of this beautiful, gorgeous detail.
I had my eyes tested last year and I do not have cataracts.
Okay, well, this is good then. We've screened that out. This is good.
I think what I maybe need to do is watch it on a computer and kind of zoom in on it a bit more, because I think that's just the problem with it on my screen. And also because I'm watching it on Now TV, which, while I'm not dissing Now TV, apparently some of their compression rates aren't great. And so there were issues around some of the way that they broadcast compared with Sky, apparently.
I'm watching it on Now TV as well. And I think there are different tiers. If you want a better kind of streaming rate, you have to pay more money.
Yeah. So that's sorry now. So that's the title sequence anyway. I mean, I think generally I don't dislike it, but I did really used to love the maps of Westeros in Game of Thrones.
Too.
Because it's partly to do with the way that all fantasy books have a map.
Yeah.
It's kind of part of the, I know I'm reading a fantasy.
It grounds that world, doesn't it?
Because I've opened it and there's a map. Even if the map is quite basic and lame, there's still usually...
And there are some really lame maps out there.
There are some awful maps where it's just like a kind of great big blob with one city. But that is part of the, you know, it's a marker, isn't it? It just tells you this is fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's why I like the maps. So we cut from the new title sequence to what we will find out is the Stepstones, and we see prisoners being eaten by crabs, which is revolting.
Yes. I mean, that's the only way to describe it. It's definitely stomach churning.
Yeah, that there are people all over the beaches. They're kind of tied up to bits of rotting rigging, or you don't really know what they're... But there are like crosses made of wood and things, and they are tied to them, and you think they're dead, and then they're feet twitch and there's a crab, and it's just disgusting.
It's like Bournemouth Main Sands after happy hour.
Or Margate Main Sands on any hot summer day.
A home from home. We should say when this episode starts, it's 6 months on from the previous episode.
Yeah. And so we also see a really weird looking guy who is also scabby and disgusting and has like balding patches. And what do you think is going on with him? Why does he look like that?
He's obviously been in some skirmishes.
Mm.
My instant feeling was, is this guy potentially part of the Targaryens? Is his appearance some kind of horrible inbreeding gone wrong?
Oh, that's interesting. Because I was just...
That was my initial thought.
I thought it was grayscale.
Oh. Mm. Yeah.
But then he seems to touch other people and not be worried about touching other people. Whereas normally when people have grayscale, it's like their isolated and kept away. But then obviously he's a...
Yeah, there's very much like a leper colony
vibe. But yeah. Then again, at the same time, he's a pirate and a wrong'un, so maybe he doesn't care if he infects people with grayscale. He's feeding them to crabs.
It looks like he's got quite horrible burns on his face.
Yeah.
So there's clearly been an accident along the way.
There's something not right. I mean, he doesn't really look completely human.
And I'm going to try and pronounce his name.
Go on then.
Kragus Drehar.
Sounds about right. I think I've heard the first one pronounced more like Kragis, but I don't know if anyone knows.
If anyone can write in, message us.
Yes, let us know.
Are we actually saying these names correctly? The thing I liked about the crab feeder appearing at the beginning of the show in the opening scene of the episode was I really felt that after all of that claustrophobic infighting in episode one, we definitely needed a bit of an external antagonist.
Completely.
Bring people out of Dragonstone, bring people out of the Red Keep and unite them against a common enemy.
Completely. And plus, obviously, this goes to show what Lord Corlys was saying in the last episode, that this stuff needs to be taken seriously.
Yes.
And we saw Viserys just being like, yeah, whatever, I want to have a party. And now this is the ramifications. These people were kind of, the beginning of the idea was that they're dealing with pirates and we don't mind if they get rid of these pirates for us, because it's a bit like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But now they're attacking Valyrian ships and they are now threatening Westerosi trade. And so Lord Corlys was right. It's like the Mujahideen, you know, it's like they're sorting out Afghanistan for us. They're getting rid of the Russians. It's great. And then, you know, 10 years later, it's like, oh.
No, all of that went unchecked. And actually we needed to put a cap on that at some point. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we see a lot more of Lord Corlys being right and taking a much more decisive, active role in this episode, which is, we are Team Corlys, so yeah.
And Corlys, I think his thing is that he just wants the king to do something.
Yeah, just turn up.
Just
turn
to up, do something.
Turn up for your job.
Have an idea in your head and then act on it. And he's getting very frustrated. So we go to the small council where poor old Lord Corlys is once again, you know, shouting into the wind as he's demanding that Viserys do something about this situation. And the small council drink wine. And Rhaenyra, despite having been appointed heir, is still there pouring this wine for them. She's not part of the council. She's still there essentially as a sort of posh waiter.
A posh maitre d'.
Yes. So what they're more invested in discussing is that the captain of the King's Guard, do I mean captain? Is that the Lord Commander?
He's passed away.
The Lord Commander has died, but apparently he was ill, so it's fine. And they need a new one because obviously there always have to be seven.
Hence the euphemism. I would have said if he'd been murdered.
Yes.
This is Westeros. Yes. We don't shy away from graphic violence.
Yeah, it's fine. He died. So Viserys has a kind of point, which is that the Westeros has never declared war on the Free Cities.
Yeah.
And it's a bit unfair to think of him as a sort of Neville Chamberlain, because I think his thing is...
That's pretty damning.
Yes. But I think his thing is, you know, my job is to prevent war until war becomes inevitable. And I think he thinks that Corlys is trying to provoke war.
Yes, absolutely.
And he doesn't want to do that. But at the same time, Corlys has a point as well, because if this is allowed to just carry on...
It's fermenting.
Yeah.
And he's worried about what the triarchy will eventually become.
And you've got to show power.
Absolutely. And we should say it's not just Viserys talking down to Corlys on this point. It's also Lord Beesbury who backs him up.
Yeah, pretty much.
When they say the Seven Kingdoms have never been at war with the Free Cities.
Yeah, pretty much the whole of the small council are like, yeah, whatever, Corlys, we need a new captain of the King's Guard, let's sort this out. So Rhaenyra, I think, kind of fed up basically of pouring wine, steps up and says, we have dragons.
Yeah.
Why don't we go over there and do a sort of aerial show? And we don't have to declare war, but it's a show of strength and a unity. But Viserys is just like, no, 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 no. Otto's like, no, 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 no. And then they say, Princess, why don't you go with Sir Harold Westerling, who's now been appointed? He used to be her sworn protector, but he's now been upgraded to Lord Commander.
He's now Chief Butler.
Yeah, so she needs to have a new sworn protector. And they say, why don't you go and help choose one?
I mean, at this stage, it feels like Rhaenyra is a better strategician than most of the men on the small council.
Yeah.
Most of them. I mean, she says, let's send dragons to Pentos.
Yes.
And like you say, it's Otto who silences her. Should we do a recap on where Pentos is, what it is?
I'm not very good on the cities of Essos. But it's, Pentos is in Essos.
It's in Essos. Thank you for that.
Is it in Slaver's Bay?
You're one of those people who do like those geolocation competitions for money.
I'm terrible with geography, even of real countries. So yes.
So let's say it's in Essos.
Yes.
And we do see a bit of it in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Progressively. I think more from kind of season 4 or 5 onwards.
Is that where Dany and the other Viserys are at the very beginning? Are they in Pentos then?
They might be. Mm. Let's double check that. So Pentos is a merchant city ruled by the Magisters. Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
So they're kind of like a group of merchant princes, and they elect a prince to rule over them, but he's kind of just a figurehead.
Right.
But it's quite brutal. If they have a harvest that fails, or if they lose a war, he gets his throat cut in the town
square. So like that kind of green man vibe.
Yeah, yeah. The kind of golden bow kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah,
James
yeah.
Frazier. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we should say, I've said the word triarchy.
Yes.
Pentos is also obviously concerned. Viserys references this. Pentos is concerned about the growth of the triarchy. The triarchy are the three cities, the allegiance formed between the three cities. And they are, and you can correct my pronunciation, Lys.
Yes.
Mir.
Yes.
And Tyrosh.
Tyrosh.
Oh, it's those Ys. They get me every time. I just thought it'd be useful in terms of locating us.
Yes. So basically, Rhaenyra has been given busy work to do.
Yeah.
And she goes sort of slightly dragging her feet with Sir Harold, and they interview a whole bunch of different knights. One of the things I always, always love, it's a bit like the banners. I also really love the fact that every house has these like wooden sort of Dungeons and Dragons type toy things that you would buy.
Like a little totem or something that has to be put into position before the actual person can step up onto the stage.
And whenever they go to war, they have those massive map tables, and they have all those...
Love a map table.
I know, I would really love one of those. And they have all the figure, you know, the little figurines. So like when the Battle of the Bastards, when they're planning the war, they've got the battle, they've got the Bolton crosses.
Oh,
and
yes.
And they're moving them around on the table. And it's like, where did they get them from?
It's the same people who are sewing all of these banners.
Someone else
they've
is whittling.
They've got a cheap workshop somewhere. Whittling.
Games Workshop.
Games Workshop.
It's like, who is making all this stuff? Anyway, I mean, it's medieval. That's just how it was in those days. But I love it. And so Criston obviously is not a noble man. So he doesn't have a special little figure. He just has a kind of wooden block. All of the others, like House Manderley and House
that's
this.
Sad. I don't think I noticed that.
Yeah, no, he's just...
Or did he just have like a little square?
Just a wooden token.
Like a coaster?
Yeah. No, it's just a kind of like a sticky thing.
He's son of the steward of the Lord of Blackhaven.
Yeah, but his
It's almost said like an insult.
It is, because he's
kind of twice removed from any position of authority.
Yeah, his dad is a servant, and he was knighted. And we get a mention of Dondarrion, which should ring a bell.
Yes.
Because Sir Beric Dondarrion is obviously the knight that Ned Stark sends to get the mountain in season 1 of Game of Thrones. And then he gets killed, and then he gets brought back to life by the Red Priest, Thoros of Myr. And
I mean, the dude's been on a journey.
Yeah, and he gets killed again and again and again. And then at the very end, he's at the Battle of Winterfell. And he's played by Richard Dormer, who has a lovely voice.
He does.
He has such a lovely voice.
Thank you for that really adept callback there. There's a lovely little pen portrait.
So Rhaenyra talks to all these different knights in this interview process. And a lot of them, it's like, you know, this is Sir Harold Manderley or whatever, who intercepted a poacher.
Oh, no, this was Sir Desmond Caron. He was the first candidate put forward, and I did feel sorry for him because Rhaenyra is quite clear that she doesn't want a tawny knight.
Yeah.
And then you've got this guy who's a bit plump. He's not been to the gym for a while. Mm. And the only thing he's done is to bring a would-be poacher to justice. Yeah. So I don't think it was even in the act of poaching.
So Rhaenyra is just like, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then Sir Criston of the flowing locks and the come-to-bed eyes appears, and obviously her little flag goes ta-ting, and she's like, you have actually fought in a proper like fight, haven't you? And he's like, yes, I was knighted on the field by
sewed banners at the Dornish Wars.
And And so Harold and Otto's lurking around there for some reason, but they kind of point out to Rhaenyra that even though her logic makes a kind of sense, it's also politics. This is not just about who she wants. It's also about keeping people on side.
Yeah, absolutely. And playing the long game, yeah, being strategic.
And if it, you know, if she's going to be the queen one day, she needs the support of these great houses. She can't just take, because they swore allegiance to her once, that this is just, that's it now. We're good to go.
You've got to keep checking in.
Yeah, and she is not good at playing that game yet.
Well, she's young, she's fiery, she's opinionated.
And she doesn't listen.
She's testing her boundaries and her power. She's obviously having this battle of wits with Viserys, and it's spilling out into all of her other kind of courtly duties. I did like the mention of all of the other houses in this scene. I thought that was quite interesting. So we had Seagard, Crakel, Malister.
Crakel.
Malister. They sound like brands of mustard in the UK. But what I thought was really nice is that we got all of these minor houses, because Game of Thrones was pretty much dominated by the big 6 to 8 houses.
Yes.
And we're getting all the small minnow now in the ecosystem with House of the Dragon.
And these obviously also would probably be second or third sons, because once you're a Kingsguard, you swear to hold no lands, father, no children. The Kingsguard, just as a tiny bit of lore, were founded by Visenya, who was Aegon's sister. Mm. And the Night's Watch were founded before Aegon came to Westeros to guard the wall. And they swore to father no children, hold no lands. And so she created the Kingsguard as a kind of counterpart.
They're like warrior monks almost, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's why they wear the white cloaks, whereas the Night's Watch wear the black. And so this is why it's quite a big deal to swear to join the Kingsguard, because essentially you're saying, that's it, I'll never marry, I'll never have children, I give up any rights to what anyone else might consider a normal life. It's prestigious, but it's also
comes with a big sacrifice. So guys, if you're listening and you're thinking about joining the Kingsguard, just, you know,
think long and hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you live a life of celibacy? Rhaenys is up there watching, and she kind of comments on Rhaenyra's kind of almost cockiness, that she thinks that she can just do what she wants. And it's not going to be as easy as she thinks. We then see Viserys and Alicent back in his divorced dad's hobby shed. I mean, his model of old Valyria.
Oh, burn. Unnecessary, but also completely necessary.
Now, these two have obviously been at this chatting about history for a while.
This is the euphemism episode, if you've just joined us.
So there's a certain level of comfort between them, familiarity.
Yeah.
And, you know, initially Alicent was very sort of stiff and awkward. And I think she is becoming almost a confidant to the king, but also slightly creepily, there is one point they're talking about Rhaenyra, and it becomes quite obvious that Rhaenyra's not talking to her father at the moment. She's still upset with him. And he says that he's frightened of her and he doesn't want to talk to her. And Alicent says, maybe he could try reaching out.
Oh, you do have such an easier way about you.
Yes.
Your grace.
But then at that point, and you don't get sexual energy from it, but Viserys also does say, let's keep this our little secret, which is kind of grooming 101.
That's interesting. Mm. I did feel that creepy, unethical sex vibe happening there. I also thought Alicent she's learning the game, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's learning to play people. And I think she felt a little bit found out in that scene as well. Mm. Like, of course you would tell Rhaenyra what we talk about, but don't.
Yeah. And I think Viserys clearly, by saying don't talk about it, he knows this isn't on the up and up. He knows it would upset Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
Because if he didn't think it was problematic, then
There'd be no reason to talk about it.
Be feel free.
Yeah.
So, I think they're walking a very fine line here, and they're being quite careful, because obviously Alicent is 14. So problematic on every level, this relationship.
It's absolutely 100% problematic.
Yeah. So there's this, like, how can we make this not totally gross for modern audiences while still acknowledging that there's a level of grossness? So it's quite a tricky line to walk, I think, because we don't want to think Viserys is a creepy pervert.
It doesn't make it any more acceptable, but we're used to reading about medieval kings and queens marrying very early.
Yeah.
And it's kind of accepted that within those structures, in order to continue bloodlines, that was the thing that was done. It makes me think if this was a story set around more lower born family, we might find it even more problematic.
Oh, completely.
If they were just peasants or knight errants,
then that would
be a little bit more difficult to take.
We also noticed that Alison is wearing her dead mother's dress in that scene, as she was instructed to.
Well, I mean, it's a lovely dress, but time and a place.
Mm. So as we've said before, it is 6 months after Emma's death and Viserys is being pressured to pick a new wife. Not so much because everyone wants him to have a lovely companion.
Or be happy.
Yeah, no, he needs an heir and the only way of getting one is to marry again. They accepted Rhaenyra, they bent the knee to Rhaenyra, but they need a backup plan.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good enough to just have the one heir. And obviously no one wants Daemon, who we haven't mentioned yet.
We haven't.
Alicent and Rhaenyra, we see them in the Sept. Now, this is the Grand Sept of Baelor, which is then rebuilt as the Great Sept of Baelor later on, which is then blown up by one Cersei Lannister with wildfire in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
But at this point, it's quite a different place to the Great Sept that we see later on. So it's much darker. And they are sitting around this altar, which is whoever lit those candles. I take off my hat and then, my God, they must have been hot.
I try to start counting how many candles there were, even just kind of like guessing, you know, like beans in a jar at a county fair or something. But I gave up.
There are so many candles. But this is a lovely scene between the two women, young women. They are talking about their mothers and how much they miss them. They're talking about their fathers and the difficulties they have relating to them.
Yeah.
Rhaenyra really wants her father to stop seeing her as a child and start taking her seriously as the heir and, you know, queen in waiting, effectively. If they don't think she's very good at being a queen, then they need to train her, not ignore her.
Absolutely.
And the problem is, by just ignoring her, they are creating this vacuum into which other people can slide. She needs her to do a proper apprenticeship.
They need to get behind her.
Yeah.
If she's the heir apparent, and even if they're going to have a spare, like you say, she needs to get the right level of training.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very touching scene. There was a moment where there was an uncomfortable truth that Rhaenyra aired, which was, I think they were talking about where she sits in terms of how seriously Viserys takes her. And Rhaenyra says, he did not choose me, he spurned Daemon. And I thought, that's incredibly telling. And really sad. I mean, she has a little cry in this scene as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to minimise it. She's obviously, like you say, she's missing her mother. I thought Alicent was very interesting in this scene as well. She was very poised. Again, she was on top form playing her game. She told Rhaenyra, well, you need to go to him.
Yes.
You need to make the effort.
She's setting them up, isn't she? She's sort of moving them together.
Yeah, the absolute reverse of what she told Viserys. Mm. Yeah.
That if I can nudge them and nudge them and nudge them gently, then one day they might actually talk. And that would be good for everyone because they're both hurt. That's the thing. They're both hurting. They're in a lot of pain and they don't know how to communicate with each other. And the longer that goes on, the worse it will get. Because then it becomes almost insurmountable.
Yes.
Then we come to another problematic scene. This is the problematic marriage episode, or one of many. Rhaenys and Corlys go to Viserys and they offer him their daughter Laena as a potential bride. This obviously makes complete sense politically. They are the richest family. They're richer than the Targaryens. They don't have the same power because they don't have dragons.
Yes. Yep.
Well, Rhaenys is a dragon rider.
That's true.
Yeah, but Corlys is
not.
But
they're kind of ship masters, aren't they? That's where their wealth is.
Yeah, and I mean, Corlys went around the world and like bought back all this treasure and traded and sold and has amassed a huge fortune. So they are very powerful. They're also pure blood of old Valyria.
Yeah.
So in terms, and Laena is only a cousin again. Probably even like a second cousin.
So that gene pool is getting a bit of a breather.
So there's some new blood coming
in
there.
No webbed fingers. Yeah, exactly.
So this makes sense on every level in terms of a political marriage. Rhaenyra and Viserys do manage to come together for dinner and they start having a conversation where they seem like they might get over this hump. But then she tries to talk to him about the situation in the Stepstones and he's just like, nah, I don't want to talk about that. You're too young.
I think there's something in there as well about, I think he feels the pressure of continuing the reign of peace that Jaehaerys had.
Mm.
And this whole episode is about not wanting to act too quickly, but that indecision costing a lot politically. So I think there's an element of that there as well with Viserys's kind of getting angry at Rhaenyra for pushing him into a sphere of action he should probably be considering.
I actually think that Viserys is, in some ways, is a very good king, because actually, like I said, being a peacemaker is not a bad thing. But it's just this really, really tricky balancing act between being such a peacemaker that you just get walked all over.
Yeah.
And I think in this world of Westeros, might is right.
Yeah, you can't be known as Viserys the doormat.
That's what... in the Chronicles.
The doormat. Oh. A family of doormat riders. Dormouse riders.
Oh. Now, we saw, you remember in the last episode, he had a tiny little cut on his pinky.
Yes, he did, which he got from the Iron Throne.
Yeah, and they did do a close-up on that. So obviously we were meant to notice it, because here we see it again, and it's rotting.
It's suppurating.
And it's not very nice. We actually open on a scene of a big bowl of maggots wriggling around, which is lovely. And then they pop his hand into it. And they're doing that thing where the idea is that the maggots will eat the rotten flesh but leave the flesh that's okay.
Yeah.
And so they're trying another cure. While that's going on, which must be quite tickly, I think. I can't imagine it being feels weird. I mean, they're eating your...
I haven't had maggots eating my flesh.
Good.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think that's a big success for me. But I have done that thing where you put your feet in a...
In those little fish.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you don't put them in the fish like slippers, but you put them in a tank of water and the fish then nibble off your skin.
And was that nice?
It wasn't ticklish, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't really see any big difference afterwards.
Oh. Well, then that's no good. This is by the by. But if you really want to have all the rough skin taken off your feet, you need to go and see a chiropractor, and they literally shave your feet. And then they're like baby's feet afterwards.
Hang on. Chiropractors align your spine. Do you mean chiropodists?
No, that's what I mean.
Don't go and see your chiropractor and ask your feet to be shaved, because we are getting into OnlyFans territory now and you will be banned. Should we talk about this scene?
No, I was enjoying that. Yeah, talk me about too. My shaven feet.
Yeah. With your very overreaching chiropractor.
Do go on.
The thing I liked about this scene is you really see the Grand Maester stepping into his role, because Viserys is talking about his marriage options, like you say. And Otto's not very keen.
No.
Well, he's kind of prevaricating. Obviously, he wants to put Alicent forward. But then the Grand Maester just lays it out there. It's going to be a sound political decision, and it's going to seal a lot of the rift that opened up at the Great Council.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't you do it?
Exactly.
And then Otto has that kind of horrible follow-up speech where, oh, he just creeps me out. And he starts with, I dearly love my own lady wife.
You see, you can't help but do impressions of Otto.
It's not like I'm turning into Wurzel Gummidge saying that. Yeah, and he says he misses his wife and he wouldn't like to be in a position where he's obliged to replace her for duty's sake. Mm. And he feels sorry for Viserys, which is like, wow, frenemy.
And I think there's an element of that where it's like, you don't have to make the political decision. You can follow your heart. He's not saying those words. But it's almost like, if you must have a wife, then why not have one that you actually fancy rather than just someone for politics?
Alison.
Alison, exactly. And Otto is just gross and creepy again. I mean, he's just does gross and creepy really well.
Channeling the Grease, isn't he?
Oh, so
I'm going to start calling
well.
Him Grease Iffens.
Nice. So we might remember those gardens in King's Landing, because Margaery was always hanging around in them with her with the Queen of Thorns.
An incredibly strong topiary game.
Yes.
Just bringing the A game every time.
And some lovely views as well.
Some lovely views.
Yeah, I've been to Dubrovnik, which is where they film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's gorgeous.
I haven't, but do you know, the views really reminded me of Sark, the island. Mm. Same kind of Mediterranean sparkling feel. Yeah. Beautiful light.
Bit warmer. So we see Viserys going for a walk with Rhaenys and Corlys's very young.
Tiny. Doll-like daughter.
Daughter Laena. Thankfully, Viserys is clearly uncomfortable with this, which is a relief, I think, to all of us. I think he, like we've said, he understands that politically this is the game that needs to be played. But he doesn't want to do this.
He doesn't want to do it. And bless Lena, she has some lines. I mean, she tries to flatter Viserys, doesn't she? She says, what was it like to fly the Black Dread, Valyrian? And she talks about dragons and their family lineages and prestige and things like that. But neither of their hearts are in this.
And also, he says to her, is that what your father told you to say? And so, of course it is. She's like six.
Yeah, she's petrified. I'm surprised she wasn't reading from an auto cue. And then that really chilling line that Viserys has, and what did your mother tell you to say? And she says that I wouldn't have to bed you until I turned 14.
No.
And wow.
And she's tiny. Yeah, it's horrible.
It's a distressing scene.
It's really distressing. And she does very well. She just, you know, she just pushes through. And I mean, it's embarrassing. It's creepy. It's just, ugh. The one thing that is interesting that she said, she mentions when she's talking about the dragons, she asks what happened to Vhagar. Vhagar was the...
Oh, yes.
The sister wife, Visenya. Vhagar was Visenya's dragon. And after Visenya dies, Vhagar kind of went wild. She's gone rogue and nobody knows where she is. But the Valyrians live on Driftmark, which is an island. And they say that they sometimes hear her song. So she's somewhere.
She's nesting nearby.
She's somewhere nearby. Mm. So this is, you know, one of those seeds that are being planted.
Going to sprout at some point. Yeah.
So Rhaenyra and Rhaenys talk. Rhaenys just tells it. She tells it like it is. She gives Rhaenyra the hard truth.
I feel like Eve Best is, I mean, this is a compliment. She performs her lines as if she's speaking through a mask. She just does not give anything away. Mm. Yeah, it's so forceful and determinative what she says.
Because she's lived this.
Yeah.
She's telling Rhaenyra, this is my lived experience. I had the better claim and the realm said no to me. The only way the realm would accept a queen was if there was if they were the sister wife queen of a king, and not going to accept a queen on their own as the ruler. And Rhaenyra, I mean, she just says, well, I'll make them accept me. And that's, again, this is part of Rhaenyra's kind of lack of understanding of any kind of diplomacy or working with people. Just as we saw when she's choosing her Kingsguard. She's like, I don't care. I want him. And that's that.
But this is the kind of tragic consequences of Rhaenyra's personality. Rhaenys is saying, you can't do all of this because of the order of things.
Yes.
This phrase that she keeps dropping like a boulder. And Rhaenyra says, no, literally through force of my own personality and will, I'm going to do it. So she's going to go head up against the system.
Well, it's very much like Dany with her endless banging on about breaking the wheel.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that easy because there are a lot of people for whom the wheel or the order of things, it benefits them.
Yeah.
So you come barging in, stomping with your little feet, going, I'm going to change things. They're just not going to let you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because why would they? It's just
not in their interest.
Yeah, the system suits them just the way it is. And I think it's a mixture of Rhaenyra's personality, but also her youth and that kind of, you know, I'll be the queen. And that means I can do what I like. And it's like that lack of understanding that the head of state does have power, but they don't actually have power at the same time. And this is where Viserys is at fault because he's not giving her the good lessons in stateswoman.
Okay, so talking about Viserys, Alicent is with the king in the next scene when Otto interrupts to inform him that Daemon has stolen an egg for the child his paramour Lady Mysaria is expecting.
Yes, so Viserys again is just like, oh, who cares? Daemon will be Daemon. And essentially is like, I don't want to go up against Daemon. I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight Daemon. I don't want to fight anyone. I just want a nice quiet life. But then Rhaenyra says, which egg?
Yeah.
And it turns out that the egg was the one that had been chosen for Balon.
Dreamfire.
The dead baby. And then he's like, I'm going. And then Otto reminds him that that would be a bad idea because that if anything happens to him, the kingdom would be left without a head of state.
Basic business continuity planning.
Yeah.
What were there's you thinking, no, Viserys?
Yeah, there's the succession plan is still not really secure. So Otto says, I'll go instead.
Yes, which is always a good move.
And that's going to go down really well with Daemon because he and Otto get on so well.
Well, they're besties. So they'll just sit there plaiting each other's hair, won't they? Shooting the breeze. Can I just say, I absolutely loved Daemon's missive as well that he sent Viserys, where he said, oh, you can come to my wedding.
Yeah.
It's tomorrow.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole thing, you already have a wife. Very confusing.
Well, it's very Targaryen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. So Otto basically sort of says, will you see the king later? And she's sort of like, oh, if you really want me to.
Oh, this is after, we should say, she's given Viserys the repaired dragon.
Oh, yes, she gives a little that present. Broke. Yes.
And I kind of thought, oh, if we're reading into the symbolism here and if we're being really creepy, it's almost like she's restoring his virility.
Oh.
The source of his power.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I don't make the rules. He's a Targaryen, so dragons are the kind of like undercut his power.
Though, of course, as she says, she got the stonemason to fix it. She didn't mend it herself.
Oh, everyone's outsourcing it.
So I was a bit like, well, you know, try harder, Alicent. You don't have any glue?
Bit of Bostick?
Super glue. Do it yourself. I mean, she didn't have to actually say that. I thought that was kind of interesting. So yes, then Otto's busy getting zhuzhed up, ready to go and face off with Daemon. And Alicent comes in to see him and he says, you're going to see the king later, are you? And she's like, oh, if I must.
If you wish it.
Yeah, it's not like a
creepy.
Woohoo, I can't wait to see the king. It's definitely a bit of a, okay, dad.
And then there's that line where he's leaving and she says, please look after the hand, Sir Criston.
Yes.
I mean, obviously it's ceremonial. She has to refer to him like that, but there was bandwidth for her to say my father.
Yes.
Please look after this person that I love. You get the sense that maybe there's a distance growing between them because he's pimping her out.
This is very true. So Otto, with a small contingent of soldiers, including, as you've mentioned, Sir Criston, head to Dragonstone and they confront Daemon in a beautifully shot scene.
Oh, it's stunning.
Absolutely
I've got in my
note,
amazing scene, yeah. Capital letters.
Yeah,
so atmospheric.
Bridge and the light.
And the mist.
Yeah.
The rolling mist.
The light
mist.
Shining through that mist behind. Daemon is just, he's there with Lady Mysaria. He's just doesn't care what Otto says, thinks, does. He's got Caraxes there. Otto stands down because obviously he's being threatened with a massive dragon. But then Rhaenyra arrives rather unexpectedly on Syrax and she basically points out to Daemon that she is there, that she is the princess of Dragonstone because Dragonstone belongs to it's like in our country, the Prince of Wales.
Yeah.
The heir owns Dragonstone, that's their seat. And so Daemon is actually squatting there and shouldn't be there at all.
Am I right in thinking, Game of Thrones history lesson here, that Dragonstone was given to Stannis Baratheon after Robert's rebellion?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, she wants the egg back. It's her brother's egg and Daemon shouldn't have it.
This is the transgression.
Yeah.
And she basically says to him, I'm in your way.
Yeah.
Shit or get off the pot.
Yeah.
Either you kill me or we stop with this bothersome whatever.
Yeah,
this
and
is.
I do like the way she does say something. Let's end this bother. And I like the bother just makes it sound like a toddler, you know.
Well, like she's the older sibling.
Yeah, she's misbehaving rather than, you know, Daemon is actually behaving in ways that are quite shocking. And she's just like, come on, uncle.
She consummately proves herself as a skilled negotiator. And I was just sad that Viserys couldn't be there to see her.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, if he was there, she wouldn't be there.
Yes.
But yeah.
And so she does a great job. Mysaria is obviously listening to this and hears Daemon talking about how they're getting married and how she's having a baby. And she's like, what now? Because she's obviously not having a baby.
Rewind.
And she's not getting married. And all of this is putting her in danger.
Yeah. And I thought that was a really moving conversation. She says she never wanted to put herself in a position where she was threatened by childbirth.
Yeah.
And obviously we're reminded of what happened to Emma only an episode before. And she doesn't want gold, power, or station. She came to Daemon to be liberated from fear.
Yes.
And
exactly.
He's failed.
And he has instead put a target on her back, squarely on her back. He has put her right in front of the highest powers in the land and made her a threat.
And said, this is my Lycian whore.
Yeah.
That I'm shacking up with, and one day she'll be queen, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And the mother of a potential dragon rider.
Yeah.
So this is, it's absolutely
but nothing
a threat.
To see here. Yeah. Just let us live out our life in peace.
Yeah, it's absolutely a threat. Anyway, Rhaenyra wins the day. Daemon sulks off after chucking the egg at her, and he really does chuck it at her.
Good catch.
Yes, but it's so disrespectful. I love the way that the dragon handler dudes were there with like some sort of little portable barbecue. Oh,
yeah. One of those little hacienda barbecues that you take to the beach to cook prawns on.
They popped it straight
fondue
in there,
set.
Popped the lid on and off it went.
Yeah, and it pinged.
Yeah.
Giant piece of toast.
And I want one thing I really did like, because often in Game of Thrones, when people were riding the dragons, it did not always look great.
The CGI could be ropey.
Yeah. But I think the Cyrax, Rhaenyra on Cyrax looks really, really good.
Yeah, there was really no good. Green screen cracking behind it. Yeah, you
definitely, and when Cyrax lands on that bridge, I mean, you do feel for the stonemasons every time the dragons land on that bridge.
Jesus.
You watch the cement crack. But I guess they're happy because they're always in work. You know,
yeah.
Which, so that's got a point.
Coffin makers and stonemasons making a killing in Westeros.
So Viserys is sort of polling everyone because he can't make a decision on his own. So he's going out for every member of the small council going, what should I do? What shall I do? Who shall I marry? And he talks to Lord Lionel Strong, and he expects Lionel, I think, to have some like cousin in the wings waiting. But Lionel gives him...
Who's a bit older.
Yeah. Straightforward, absolutely honest, unbiased advice. And he says, Laena is young, but she'll get older. And she is the best political marriage to unite Valyrian and Targaryen.
Pretty much what the Grand Maester said.
Exactly.
Just backing that up.
Yeah. And this is, I think, again, we're seeing, we've not seen very much of Lord Strong, but he's one of the few members of the small council who doesn't seem to have his own agenda. He is just there.
He's there to give advice.
Yeah, but straight advice. Well, unlike Otto, who is more and more, we are starting to see, is stirring the pot.
I mean, we've established that Lord Strong is probably a bit of a misogynist, but... Yeah. That's
but only
more
in
the
sense
tradition
of the, way,
of the Westerosi.
Yeah. Only in the sense that they all are. I don't think he's exceptional. Rhaenyra comes back with the egg, and Viserys gives her a bit of a ticking off because obviously she put herself in danger, and he points out, you are my heir. If anything happened to you, it would leave the kingdom.
This was a hugely
bereft.
Cathartic scene.
Yes, and they both get a lot off their chests, and they really needed to. Rhaenyra stands up for herself. Viserys acknowledges that she is unhappy and that she has suffered this great loss and that she is grieving and he is grieving. And he says, I miss your mother. And she says, I do too. And they both, you know, it's therapy for them. They needed to get this out and have this conversation.
Absolutely. And funny thing is, I didn't register the cut in the scene, and I thought Lord Strong was still there whilst they were having their heart-to-heart. I just thought it was quite embarrassing for him if he'd had to like back out of the room or pretend to be a lampshade or something.
Moonwalk out.
No, you guys are good. Don't stop.
No, it's just the two of them. And he says, I will marry. I have to remarry. I don't want to particularly.
And she accepts that, I think.
And she understands that she can't be the only heir because, as he says, if anything happens to her, what will happen? There has to be a succession plan. And this has been the, you know, royal families through the ages. You cannot have this vacuum.
I think she's ambitious and she wanted her status as heir validated and backed up by him. But I think, like you say, the biggest thing was she wanted to be seen as a grieving daughter.
Yes.
Like, it's only been 6 months and it feels like Emma's a long distant dream.
I think it's the combination, isn't it, of being taken seriously as the potential heir, but also for them in private to share, because they both loved Emma.
Yeah.
And yet Viserys, I think,
we all loved Emma.
We all loved Emma, but poor Emma. I mean, my God, that
she's
death.
In a better place.
But that
Essos.
That she also wants to talk about her feelings. She obviously wanted to with Alicent. She talks trying really hard to say, look, I'm unhappy. You're unhappy. Let's be unhappy together. We can comfort each other.
Do you know, and I think she's slightly frustrated because she can feel her relationship with Alicent changing hour by hour. You know that moment in the set where Alicent is basically, right, okay, we've done enough talking. Come pray with me. Like a Princess Diana character.
And Alicent's religious piety is interesting as well, because obviously Rhaenyra, the Targaryens don't believe in the Seven and Alicent does. And so you can see Rhaenyra, like Alicent's there with her eyes closed and, you know, like one of those pictures of little children before bed kind of vibe. And Rhaenyra's still got her eyes open and she's obviously thinking about her mother. And it's not a bad space that she's being allowed to have to be sad, but she's not interested in praying to any gods.
She'll pay minimal lip service to advance her claim on the throne, but that's it.
Yeah. So obviously Viserys is now, having polled everyone and been told, Laena, 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 Laena.
He's been in the WhatsApp group for hours now, chatting individually.
Laena is the answer. So the small council meet and Viserys announces in a kind of Strictly Come Dancing way, we'll be back after the break with the last candidate, the Lady Alicent Hightower. And oh my God, I mean, the expressions on their faces, the reaction shots are just,
it's Rhaenyra for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought she was going to dive at people with a knife. Well, she's losing her friend, isn't she? And she feels just doubly betrayed.
You also know
Viserys.
It's weird anyway. Something's obviously weird because Alicent's there. Alicent's never been in the small council. Why is she suddenly here?
Yeah.
Something's off.
Yeah.
And I think almost before he says it, Rhaenyra clocks that Alicent's there. And then he says it and she's just like, you're my best friend and you're fucking my dad.
Not cool.
Yeah.
Like bros before hoes, Alicent.
Completely. Or sisters before misters.
Sisters before misters. Is that actually a saying? Yeah. Okay, cool. Right, we'll go with that.
But, you know, imagine if your best mate, you know, your parents get divorced and then your best mate's coming around for dinner and then suddenly it's like they announce that they're getting married.
Well, I don't have to imagine because that's exactly what happened in my family.
Oh, God.
No, I'm joking.
And then your sister married your brother.
Wow. You've been reading my diary.
Leaping around. And your real secret last name is Targaryen, right?
Yeah, that's all true. Join us next week for...
Oh, God, therapy. Lord Corlys obviously is also...
He is pissed.
Absolutely offended and just walks out of the room. And I think he's pissed off. You know, he's always sort of like, this would make up for what happened to you, to Rhaenys. I kind of feel that some of that's bullshit. It's self-serving.
Yeah, totally.
He doesn't really care that Rhaenys was passed over. That's like, you know, but he just uses that as an excuse to, again, to further his own agenda. But I think he has every reason to be pissed at this point because the fact is that it does make perfect sense that Viserys marries Laena. And the fact that he's picked the slightly less age inappropriate, like the ancient Alicent, who's all of 14.
The Methuselah candidate.
It's like, and people sort of say things like, you know, why doesn't Viserys find someone, you know, are these the only two candidates, these two children? Surely there might be like a sort of 19-year-old. But we're not, it's, yeah, I mean, a really age-appropriate candidate would be someone in their 30s, and then you've got the worry that they're not going to be fertile for very long. And the other thing that I did read, which I thought maybe made me feel that Viserys wasn't being quite as much of a shit as it feels like he's being, is that if he's genuinely worried that he's not very well, then they don't have a lot of time.
Yes.
And he needs to get someone pregnant. He can't wait for Laena to age up to the point where he can...
I think he knows by this point, doesn't he, with his pinky wound, with his suppurating sore on his back. I think he knows that this is it's a matter of time
now.
Yeah,
there's a ticking clock.
Yeah.
And so the sooner he can get married and the sooner he can impregnate...
The maggot clock.
And obviously you also have...
Sorry.
And also you always have the thing of like, you even got to hope that these people can get pregnant. I mean, you know, there's no guarantee. Or that even if you can get pregnant, that you'll... I mean, look what happened to Emma. One living child.
Childbirth is a battlefield.
Yeah.
And there's no IVF in Westeros.
No IVF, no anesthesia, no actually sterile...
Milk of the poppy, but I mean, that's
no
not
sterile surgical conditions. And so it's a big gamble. Even if he does get remarried, there's still no guarantees. So picking someone who's young, fertile, strong...
Gives him a fighting chance. Continuing his life.
Yes, exactly. And then we see Lord Corlys chatting to someone. We don't know who it is initially. But they're talking about battle plan. Chatting to Daemon.
Well, we kind of did know it was Daemon.
We're chatting to old Daemon.
Oh, Daemon. You want to go out on the Raz tonight?
Daemon. And I think one of the things that I liked about that conversation, though, is that Corlys is, you know, he's still obviously really angry with Viserys. So he says a few things about Viserys. And Daemon is like, I can shit talk my brother.
You can't.
But you can't.
Yeah. I'm going to pull
rank. Oh, talking of shit talking. I forgot about this, but there's a really funny bit when they're on the bridge, when Daemon's trying to be like, Sir Crispin? Christy? And I seem to vaguely remember you to Criston Cole. And Criston Cole's like, maybe my prince will remember when I knocked him off his horse. and it's like, he's not being inaccurate. He's just like, I'm not putting up with that nonsense from you.
Yeah, no shade.
Yeah, just prince or no prince, I'm not putting up with that. So I think Daemon had a bit of a ego blow or two this episode.
Yeah, definitely.
But obviously he and Sir Corlys are now allying to go and take the fight to the Stepstones. If the king won't do it, they're going to do it because Corlys can't lose any more ships.
No.
Basically in that stage where it's like they've actually taken down some of his own ships with his personal sigil, and he won't put up with this. He will not put.
And more so, I think he just wants a show of power, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because right at the beginning of the episode, Otto does say, if you're that worried about what's happening in the step zones, we can compensate you for the loss of your four ships or whatever it was. And he says, no, we need to make a stand.
Yeah.
But he is ultimately, like you say, he's a merchant seaman. Mm. He's driven by money and power.
And Viserys, I think, does, again, to sort of say he's not doing much, but he does say he's going to send a letter.
Yes.
A strongly worded letter
yeah. in green ink to the people of Pentos.
Yes. So I think he feels like he's doing... I think he feels like he's doing a sort of, it's a measured response. He's trying to kind of take the heat out of this. And he's
people are
do...
saying the continent is falling apart. Yeah. And Viserys is saying, well, I have sent an email, but that was last Thursday, but I will give them to the end of the week to respond.
Yeah, because I think that's fair.
Because I don't want to be pushy.
Yes. And also, if you keep pestering people, it annoys them.
And it could have gone into the junk mail folder.
Possibly.
So.
I feel for Viserys. I think
that's a club of one here.
Yeah, but I think he's still in mourning. And I think he's a bit paralysed.
Yeah, true. It's 6 months on.
Hmm. I think he's a bit paralysed by
he's living in
guilt
the past.
And inertia. And probably just sort of lying there every day thinking, God, what did I do to my wife? Fred doesn't sleep very well. Why he's painting those models.
Well,
he's
tiring himself out with all that whistling, isn't it? Yeah. Well, he's not. He's actually giving just directions to the stonemasons.
That takes a lot of...
That's exhausting.
Delegation
if you've ever
is
worked with
tiring.
Stonemasons, it's... Yeah.
Yeah. Or just builders in general. Just... They want endless cups of tea.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's time to do a little tiny deep dive into a little specialist subject. And
specialist subject corner.
Yeah.
I feel like I should do the heartbeat music.
The maester's spacer.
Oh, that really didn't land.
No,
did it?
It's awful.
Ooh, uncomfortable. Well, okay, so we're talking about the chivalric code and courtly
yes.
love this week.
It's partly because obviously
when I say courtly love, not courtney love.
Courtly
love.
Yes. Because it's to do with the fact that Rhaenyra is picking her sworn protector.
Yeah.
So up until now she's had a fairly elderly sworn protector, so they've obviously he's had quite a fatherly, you know, I always worry when you're up on your dragon princess kind of vibe. And now she's got this young dishy. That's a word I haven't ever used before in my life.
Dishy. I've seen it written. I've never said it. I've heard it said. Yeah. And I thought, no, I'm never going to say that.
Yeah, I'm never going to say it again.
Horrible word.
It is. A young and attractive man who's basically, their job is to pretty much follow her around.
Yeah.
And make sure she's safe.
He's the Kevin Costner to her Whitney Houston.
Exactly. Though that's quite a dated reference for younger people. Audience.
Do we think anyone young is going to be listening to us talk?
I don't know.
Brave.
And we also saw some of the chivalric code being blown up in the last episode during the tournament. There were elements of the chivalric code that were in evidence there. But then obviously the idea is not to smash people's heads in. So they kind of threw that out of the window. So chivalry was an informal code of conduct that became popularized in medieval Europe from 12th century onwards. It arose from an idealized version of knighthood in which knights, the word...
French, isn't it?
Yeah, the word chivalry comes from the French chevalier, which means horse rider or knight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because cheval is
Yeah, yeah,
horse.
Of course, makes yeah. sense.
And the idea was that all knights were brave, honorable, pious, generous, good fighters, but also kind and noble.
There's a real standard there.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, this is, you know, the Lancelots, the Arthurs, that they were these sort of perfect gentle knights.
And chivalry is linked to the idea of courtly love. How?
Yes. Well, courtly love is something that only knights can really do because it's a kind of only for the nobles. Peasants
right.
don't really indulge in courtly love. And in this case, a knight pledges his devotion to a lady. So I guess the idea of the pledging of the devotion helps with them being honourable and brave because they direct their energy to feats of devotion and purity and showing their like love for the lady.
So this is a completely platonic relationship.
Yes. Ish.
But we know from medieval literature, a lot of these platonic relationships
yes.
kind of crashed and burned because
yes.
this energy went all over the place.
Yes, the idea was that it was meant to be platonic. It's not supposed to be consummated. They're supposed to channel their sexual energy into higher ends.
Right.
But obviously that didn't really work because they often set out to go on these quests. It would be like, I will find the grail. I'll go and do this. I'll go and kill that beast. yada, yada, yada. But then you get to the point of something like Lancelot and Guinevere, where they have this massive sexual attraction. And Lancelot's kind of trying to distract himself by doing lots of feats of arms. And it, then he just ends up...
He ends up
boning her, and then it all goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
We see examples of the chivalric code at the tournament where the knights ask for favours from the noble women. So I think Damon, in his usual way, manages to offend Otto by asking Alicent for her favour. Alicent didn't seem to mind
Very
it too much.
Very clever move.
Yeah.
She knew what was happening.
And I think that's after he'd just broken her brother's nose. but the idea being that the lady gets a sort of reflected glory because the knight's fighting in her name. So he's jousting in her name. He'll win the battle for her. He'll win the joust for her.
I see. And is this favour always a physical object?
Yes.
Or can it just be a word?
No, it's a thing.
Because I think they give them garlands in...
Because often they put garlands because they can just be put over the...
Slid down the lance.
Yeah. But also it would often be like a sleeve, because the sleeves were detachable in that time.
You just give away your sleeve?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a handkerchief or a scarf, yeah. Something that could easily be removed
I've heard of hankies.
Yeah, without your dress falling apart. And and then that could be like tucked into the knight's breastplate or tied around the arm.
And he would carry a little bit of his lady with
him. Yes, exactly. So we see Rhaenyra obviously has had a sworn protector. She will have had one since she was born because they're basically a bodyguard, a close arms officer, I think they call it in Secret Service. And Sir Harold Westerling has now been promoted to Lord Commander following the death of Ryan Redwine. I think you say it like that, who we talked about earlier. Now, the Kingsguard in Westeros are sworn to celibacy. So the idea is that they're entirely devoted to the service of the princess or the royal family. They're not allowed to consummate those relationships because, and this is absolutely the epitome of chivalry. Now, we see Sir Harold, as far as we can see, he is a completely honourable, loyal servant of the crown. He's much older than Rhaenyra, so...
He's like this really great grandfather knight figure,
really good
isn't
uncle kind of vibe, and not a creepy uncle.
It's a really clean, innocent relationship all about just protecting Rhaenyra.
And he'd have known her since she was a child.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see how...
Sir Crispy... Gets it on.
Oh, yes.
Or takes to his role, we should say.
It will be interesting to see how he takes to his role, because we can clearly see... that both Rhaenyra and Alicent got a bit of a gleam in their eyes when they saw him at the tournament.
Their little garlands popped when they saw him.
God.
I don't know what that's about.
So, yes.
There's tension there.
Something to look forward to. There's definite tension.
Well, thank you very much for that overview of chivalry and...
Very short overview.
And courtly love.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. No, that's really interesting. And thank you for the recap of episode 2 and a great chat as per.
Thank you as always for coming with insights and also interesting pronunciations.
Thank you. And thank you for correcting those interesting pronunciations.
And next week.
Next week.
Next week we have another time jump. This week was only 6 months. The next time jump is 2 years.
Yeah.
So we need to be prepared.
And they're going to get bigger, I think, the time jumps.
I thought you meant the people.
The people.
They're only 6 foot in this episode.
Now
but
they're
next
be 18
week,
feet.
They're going to be massive. So we've got time jumps. So we've got new characters. We're going to have some new places, some old familiar names that we will remember. So it's a good one.
And the next chapter in Sir Crispy and Rhaenyra's relationship.
Oh, yes.
Okay, until next time.
Until next time. Valar Morghulis.